The Cambrian explosion happened more than 500 million years ago. It produced the largest and most diverse grouping of animals the Earth has ever seen, the arthropods. And this intense burst of evolution left traces in the fossil record in central Wisconsin, Blackberry Hill, USA. We're talking about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have you heard of Blackberry Hill or the Waukesha biota? What piques your interest about a new species of prehistoric scorpion that may have been capable of leaving its marine habitat and venturing onto land to breathe air? 800-642-1234. Kenneth Gass is an honorary curator to the Department of Geology at the Milwaukee Public Museum, lead author of a new paper in Geology Today about Blackberry Hill. Kenneth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Take us to Blackberry Hill first. Give us a picture in our mind's eye of what it looks like, what this area looks like, and what it might have been like hundreds of millions of years ago.
Well, at Blackberry Hill in Wisconsin, which was in Marathon County, it was quite different. This was a tidal flat at the beach of a sea that was about 500 million years ago. And so what it did was, we can imagine the significant parts of it are that it showed us what the first animals were to actually walk on land, come out of the water and start to inhabit the land. And also it told us why they took that first pioneering step. And of course, that was a major turning point in the history of life on Earth. There's a lot of other things that are very significant about Blackberry Hill and that part of the country besides that, but it mainly allowed us to paint a much more complete picture of the first animal life on land than was previously possible.
What are these quarries like? What are these quarry explorations?
The quarries are what basically is Blackberry Hill. These quarries together, they basically are right next door to each other. They're, like I said, in Marathon County. One is about a mile and a half further down. But they're all located at what used to be that beach, that big, broad beach, which was a sandy tidal flat. And the tidal flat was extremely wide, because back at that time, the moon was much closer to the Earth than it is now, so the effect of the tides was much greater. And so the water came much further up inland, up to a mile or more. It brought with it many of the creatures that had been living in the sea, so it washed up a lot of animals that maybe didn't even want to be there, such as jellyfish. In fact, the largest mass stranding of jellyfish ever found, and one of the first ones and the oldest ones, was found right there at Blackberry Hill. There are thousands and thousands of jellyfish, which only rarely fossilize, of course, and because of the fact that they're made up almost entirely of water. But also other animals came up that maybe some of them actually had an advantage to being there. Some of these, as you mentioned, arthropods, animals with jointed legs and segmented bodies. One in particular called a euthycarcinoid. And what that is, you can kind of think of that as being a centipede with a tail.
Mm.
That was actually what the first animal was that walked on land. We found three fossils of those at the quarries in Blackberry Hill that you talked about. And those three fossils turned out to be euthycarcinoid. Now, that meant we knew that there was an animal that was of the right size and shape and had the right number of legs, etc., that could have been used to make those footprints that had been found. But what we didn't know yet was, okay, are those the actual animals that made them, or maybe did they just get washed up on the beach? So what happened was, and that was about the year 2000, roughly 2000, and up to 2006 that those three fossils were found of that animal. A couple of years later, I took my son Todd out to the quarry, one of the quarries, with me, and lo and behold, he stumbled upon a slab of fossils. It was basically what it showed was impressions of that animal that we had found caught in the act of making these first footprints on land.
Hmm. Wow.
So that was the discovery that sort of cinched it. We knew that, yes, these three fossils of the animal were the animals that made those footprints.
And what was the process like to verify that, to put that story together with those footprints, to actually know what you were seeing?
Well, the impression of the animal had segments. You could tell this little series of little notches, I guess you'd call it segments, that were impressed into the sediment, into the sand. And there were the same number of segments as that animal has in its tail. They were the same shape, same size. Everything was very consistent. So this was the impression of that animal that was actually, as it finished making this turn, these segmented tail imprints sort of transformed into, right before your eyes, they transformed into the typical, stereotypical trackway that we'd been finding since the 1850s that were the first animal footprints on land. So, and that's, we also confirmed it with experiments. We made a model of the tail of that animal. And we used it to see if we could duplicate all of those footprints and other markings in the sand using that model. And we did. We successfully did create those. And actually, we talked about this. I was on WPR once before. We talked about this. But one of the things that we learned since that time is why they came out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, the great amount of effect that the tide had at that time, it washed all these animals up. So the animals that had an advantage of any sort to find their way back into the water after they were washed up a mile onto the beach, say, had a distinct advantage. They could get back into the water. They could find the tide pool if they could walk on land, and they could get back into that water and save their lives by not drying out, having their gills dry out. And they also could lay their eggs in the tide pools. And we believe that's what they did.
Hmm.
So the advantage that they that the euthycarcinoids had that the other animals at that time did not. They could actually get up on their feet a little bit and walk around. They weren't really good at it yet, but in many cases it was enough for them to find their way back to a body of water and survive.
Let me reintroduce you as we talk with Kenneth Gass, who discovered an important fossil with his son on Blackberry Hill in Marathon County in 2008, and the discoveries since then, honorary curator to the Department of Geology at the Milwaukee Public Museum. You can join in. Have you heard of Blackberry Hill or the Waukesha biota? What is your experience with these preservation sites? Have you ever found a fossil? How did you find it? What did you do with it? How did you research its history? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kenneth, do you think that paleontologists have unlocked all the secrets, have found all the secrets that are to be discovered at Blackberry Hill? Or do you think there's more there?
There's more there. We know that there are some that we even know something about that haven't been published yet, but we know that because these are still active quarries, they will still continue to turn up. Remember, this is a very pivotal time of the world's history. This was at a time when, like you mentioned earlier on, this is the Cambrian explosion. This was when life basically exploded onto the scene from basically no animals and some kind of life, but they weren't really animals, to lots of different phyla of animals.
Mm.
And it was typically thought that that life emerged on land so many millions of years later that it was way later, maybe the Devonian period or something, where you had vertebrates coming out of the water. But this was basically the Cambrian explosion also exploded life onto land, which generally isn't thought of too much because people, like I said, normally think of life coming about like 100 million years later. But here they were walking around. They weren't permanent residents, but they were animals that spent part of their time on land, part of their time in the water.
Why do you think it's important to find the earliest evidence of a creature that could breathe air or survive in both environments?
Well, it sort of led to what we have today. If you look around you, everything you see is living on land or in the air, which again is under the air rather than underwater. In order for us to be here, in order for everything that we see around us, it of course had to adapt to living on land. So our own existence depends on the story that this tells us. And it's not that Blackberry Hill is the only place that had these animals coming out. It's just it's the only place that we've ever found these things coming out of the water at that time. There's only one other example And that was in Quebec. There is a place that has fossils of a different species of euthycarcinoid, about the same environment, same age, but there's no smoking gun like we have here, like that fossil that my son found that kind of links the body fossil with the trace fossil. And it's just it's kind of an unusual environment, so you don't find outcrops of this type of the intertidal beds and the supertidal beds and the dunes. You just don't find that too often. And when you do, like I said, they're all so far have all been in North America.
We need to take notice of it. Let's pause right here as we explore evidence for the earliest life on land, the groundbreaking discoveries from Blackberry Hill with Milwaukee Public Museum honorary curator, independent researcher Kenneth Gass. Have you ever found a fossil? How did you find it? How did you research where it came from? And what did you do with it? What's on your mind about the Cambrian explosion? Join in on Paleontology, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Kenneth Gass here on the Ideas Network. We're rewinding to roughly 500 million years ago when animals came to land, and the early seas, they were a scary place, and what Blackberry Hill fossils tell us. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Blackberry Hill in central Wisconsin, recognized as containing one of the largest, perhaps the largest concentration of trace fossils in Cambrian intertidal rocks. The Cambrian era, as we've been talking about, was when the relatives of all major animal groups alive today first appeared in the water. Do you wonder why Cambrian creatures look so odd? What questions do you have about quarries, about digs, studying fossil remains? 800-642-1234 to join in. Kenneth Gass is an independent researcher, honorary curator with the Milwaukee Public Museum with us for the hour. Kenneth, take us to the Waukesha Biota in Waukesha County. It's been described as a hotbed for ultra-rare fossils. What do you see there?
Why is it so important? I guess what we see is just exceptional preservation of its fossils that have allowed us to see types of animals that have never been seen in rocks of this age, which is Silurian, about 437 million years ago. So it's a little bit after it's two geologic periods after the Cambrian. There were very few windows showing what the animal life was truly like, because most of the fossils from the Silurian period are from hard parts, as most fossils are. They're the shells, the bones, things like that. But at Waukesha, the preservation is such that it actually preserves soft tissues like skin, legs, eyes, internal organs, things like that, which is extremely rare to fossilize. And entire biota were missed from the conventional quarries, from the other kinds of quarries that only preserve hard parts. We didn't see any of the species of worms or things like that that normally don't fossilize. And here in Waukesha, we do. We found is lots of new kinds of animals that had never been seen. The oldest fossilized leech was found there. Various kinds of worms, new kinds of crustaceans, like things like crabs and crayfish. Relative of the horseshoe crab, a bunch of other very unusual arthropods.
And scorpions, they may have been among the first animals ever to adapt on land. What did you find with scorpions?
Well, we actually thought that there was a scorpion from there, and it was publicized. It was published in a peer-reviewed journal. But some other researchers took some closer looks at it, and we found that it actually wasn't a scorpion. There actually are no scorpion fossils that found in Wisconsin of any age in Wisconsin, any scorpion fossils. But we thought that there was one there from there, but it turned out to be something else, I think, equally interesting. It was another kind of a crustacean that's very rare called a thylacocephalon. Called a coloniellid, but that's a here or there. So you have to be careful. A lot of times these things are interpreted and then they're reinterpreted when better material comes up. The Waukesha biota collection was kind of scattered for quite a while, and so nobody had really seen, few people had actually seen the whole collection all in one time at one place. So now that we have, we've been able to get a better idea of that, plus a lot of other things. And just a couple of other things. There's something called a lobopod, which is sort of like a caterpillar-like animal that has been found there, and a rarely preserved animal called a conodont, which is sort of like a little eel-like animal. And Waukesha is only the second place in the world where the conodont animal has ever been found, even though that little tooth-like pieces of that animal had been found for about 200 years or so throughout the world without ever knowing what they came from. So Waukesha, again, you know, ended that debate as well.
You mentioned in your article that the early seas were a really scary place. What did you mean by that?
Well, there were quite a few predators by that time. Many years ago, before we discovered things in the Burgess Shale, we thought that the Cambrian was, trilobites may be the scariest things there were. You know, yes, some of those are probably carnivorous, but most of them probably aren't. Other than that, we had like jellyfish, clams, snails, things like that. Not too many of those in the Cambrian, but, you know, things that were pretty harmless. Well, it actually turns out with some discoveries that were found in Canada and now other parts of the world, there were some very large predators, large by Cambrian standards. Most fossils back then were like an inch long, something like that. These things called anomalocarids were in the Cambrian seas, and they were quite scary because they were maybe up to 3 feet long, up to a meter long, and they were definitely the terrors. They would eat pretty much anything else if they could get their appendages on. And so that was one of the things that I think is important to remember, is that it was a scary place. There were probably a lot of pressures for the animals to get to a safer place to live and to lay their eggs. And we think that's what happened at Blackberry Hill.
Kenneth Gass with us, honorary curator to the Department of Geology at the Milwaukee Public Museum, written multiple books on paleontology in Wisconsin. You can pick his brain on fossils in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Have you been to a fossil exhibit in a Wisconsin museum? Where was it? What was memorable? What did you find? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Can you place us a little bit more in the Silurian period and what was going on there and what, you know, because of the period was the Great Extinction, what was happening on Earth and then perhaps what was happening in Wisconsin during this time?
Sure. Well, we're talking about, so far we've talked about the Cambrian period, which is about a half a billion, about 500 to 520 million years ago. And we also talked about the Silurian, which is quite a bit later, 300 and some million years ago. In the Cambrian, Wisconsin was basically didn't exist. There was no North America. The continents were completely different. There was a supercontinent called Laurentia, and that was where this all took place. We were all part of Laurentia at that time. And this was right along the coast, of course, because that's where we have the tidal and the tides coming in. This is all the coast. So if you look at these quarries, you can see the outline of the continent because that is where you're finding the beaches, intertidal areas. And so it was very different. It was semi-tropical. There was no life on land except for the ones that I just talked about. There were no plants, no vegetation. The land plants had not evolved yet by that time. They might have just been barely beginning, but no real evidence of them so far except for maybe some spores. But basically all there was on land were these things called microbial mats that covered the shorelines of a lot of these beaches. They also, of course, still live today. They're one of the biggest oxygen-producing materials in the world and always have been since we started, you know, with the oceans, getting the microbial mats in the ocean, the microbes. So there was a lot of... It was a very different place. It was by the Silurian time, there was quite a bit of life on land by that time. It was starting to get a little bit green. There were starting to be more kinds of animals coming out of the water, and perhaps even these euthycarcinoids had evolved into full-fledged myriapods by that time on land, which are the centipedes and millipedes. And so life was still not anywhere near the same as it is now in the Silurian. But like I mentioned, the Cambrian was radically different because that was the very first stages of terrestrialization. So all the life was in the seas. We had And as far as the fossils in Wisconsin go and other parts of the world, this was also the Silurian was the age of the corals. And a lot of coral reefs and different kinds of corals than there are today, but they were still recognizable as being big coral reefs.
But let's just pause right here as we spend the hour on paleontology and fossils in Wisconsin with researcher Kenneth Gass, studies fossils found in his native state. What makes you curious about the fossils of the Cambrian Tidal Flats? How about the biodiversity of the Zavishian Milwaukee Formation? Are you a hobby paleontologist digging in your backyard? What have you found? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Kenneth Gass after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're learning about fossil deposits in Wisconsin and what they can tell us about what life was like 500 million years ago as life came out of the early seas and made a go of it on land. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Paleontological researcher Kenneth Gass concludes in his paper, "We all owe our existence to the events that occurred half a billion years ago at Blackberry Hill." What remains a mystery to you about the Cambrian era? Where should fossils be housed? What about reparations of fossils and ancient specimens? How do we decolonize? 800-642-1234. Kenneth Gass with us for the hour. Let's go to Bruce now in Holman. Hi, Bruce. You're a retired teacher, I understand.
Yes, good morning. In my teaching, I did a unit on archaeology with my students, and one of the things that I stressed was the importance of avoiding becoming a casual artifact collector, because a lot of archaeological evidence, once it's removed, if it's not done professionally, it loses its provenance, it loses its value as telling its historical story. And what I'm concerned about is, and a lot of archaeological sites in Wisconsin have been, looted, vandalized, damaged, to the point where a lot of their value is lost. But in terms of paleontological, sites, I'm concerned about by giving out the location, Blackberry Hill, Waukesha County, even though it's not an exact location, what do you do about security for those areas to keep the casual fossil hunter from going in and moving things?
Bruce, great questions there. Let's get Kenneth to respond. Kenneth, go ahead.
A lot of different things can be done and are being done about that. First of all, the Waukesha biota is basically blasted into oblivion already, so there's really nothing to take anymore from that. It was just a very narrow, this is the Waukesha biota, the soft-bodied life in the Silurian period, only about roughly 6-inch thick layer of rock that actually had these soft-bodied creatures in them, very limited in geographic extent, just limited to two quarries, and they're basically... all the material is gone now because it's an active quarry. And so that's kind of not even a deal anymore as far as preserving that because it's already gone. Not gone literally, and of course, all the material's in museums now, in the Museum of Madison now. But as far as the Cambrian goes, a little bit different story with that one. That's all on private property. So the only way that, and most of it is hard to get to, hard to find, But also just knowing that ethically it is not proper for somebody to go in there and basically steal product. These are active quarries. They sell these slabs of rock for building stone, decorative trim, countertops, things like that. So if you steal a rock, walk away with it, you're stealing product from, and you can actually be, of course, penalized for that. There are also physical gates that prevent some people from going in there. But mainly just the ethical knowing that this is private property, and you should always get the private property permission before you enter. Every quarry that's in Blackberry Hill is on private property. And by the way, most of the property owners, the quarry owners, don't allow people, they don't allow casual collectors, and even most of them don't even allow professional people to come in there and do studies anymore. It's very, very difficult for me to get in there, too. Sometimes they'll let me in, sometimes they don't. You know, if there's blasting going on, of course, it's an unsafe thing. And then the third thing is just, just to answer, a completely different kind of preservation, and we're all concerned about preservation, at least as much as you apparently are. What we try to do is to find some way to make it difficult, if not impossible, to obliterate these famous places. The Milwaukee Formation at Estabrook Park, that's where it is. I can tell you where it is. But it, being in a county park, all property, all parts of a county park are basically sacred. You cannot legally remove anything from a Milwaukee County Park, and that is a Milwaukee County Park ordinance. And so you can't remove a leaf, a stone, a rock. I think fish are about the only things you can actually remove from there, from the river. So you can't remove a rock. You can't do any digging. And so that's a law. That's an actual law. And so that is a way to preserve. Now, it almost sounds like it's a way to prevent people from collecting, and it is. You can't collect there, which has a downside, but you can't own the material. But on the other hand, it's very rare, and this is the last good location, so you want to have some good protection. So the very, very activity that helps to preserve these fossils is also the same one that keeps you from collecting them, which is, you know, just kind of the way it is. But that's one of the other ways of protecting these things is an actual law, like an ordinance.
What do you make? I know you said you take photographs as much as possible. What do you make about not disturbing a site, but just taking the photographs? Is that enough?
Taking the photographs, actually, you know, when I go into Blackberry Hill quarries personally, I don't take anything anymore other than a camera. I take maybe molding material so that I can make a mold of something. Very rarely do I remove anything from the quarry, and you don't have to. And it's very difficult because the rocks at Blackberry Hill are extremely heavy, and most of the fossils you take out of there are in the hundreds or thousands of pounds. So you can't exactly pick it up, put it in your pocket, and throw it in your trunk or whatever, you know. But even if you do, you buy them. That's what I do. I buy them by the pound. So it's a piece of rock used for my fireplace. So these are ways of keeping me from going crazy and buying too much of it either, as I can't afford to buy that stuff. It's too heavy and too expensive. But there are lots of ways to control what's happening at these rare places.
Let's go to Jim now with a question. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. When I was young, 50 years ago, I guess, we would go to High Cliff State Park, and because that's the shale, the limestone shale and things like that, you could pick up pieces and there'd be fossils all over the place. So I was wondering if your guest has done any exploration up there. And then the second thing that came to my mind this morning is that there are also these shale limestone caverns just outside of Chilton, not too far from High Cliff State Park, and I was wondering what they might find in places like that. So I'll listen off the air, and I appreciate your conversation this morning. Thank you.
Yes, Jim, thank you so much for calling in. Kenneth, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the part of the state that has Ordovician rock that's at the surface. So most of the caverns, the caves that are in this area, in that area, are cut into the Ordovician rock, which puts back, it's a period right between the Cambrian and the Silurian. So it's mainly known for its marine fossils again, nothing up on the land, basically. But it had a lot of cephalopods, these big shells of animals that were the cousin of a squid and octopus.
Hmm.
They could get up to be 10 feet long or so, a cone-shaped 10 feet long. And other kinds of trilobites and brachiopods and corals and things like that, again. there were already quite a few corals in the Ordovician and other kinds of colonial animals. So, yeah, that's basically what probably most of the rock in that area is Ordovician. You might have some stuff moved around by the glaciers that kind of was dumped off there from other periods, older or newer, but it's mostly Ordovician.
Have any other paleontologists explored that area?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I personally haven't done much work in the Ordovician myself, but
okay. Lots
of people have. There are lots of species of trilobites and other kinds of animals that have been found in the Ordovician rocks in Wisconsin by other people from starting 150 more years ago. So, yeah, there's quite a bit known about that and published about the Ordovician rocks around there. And you can commonly find things like clams,
mm-hmm.
pod fossils in these rocks in western, southwestern Wisconsin.
I would imagine, too, that you have to take it slow in these areas and really look carefully and observe everything you can around you. What is your process for, as you go out on an expedition?
I'm just focused on what is basically to be expected there. And if there's something that hasn't been found, but we know it probably exists, to keep my eye open for that certain shape and color. A lot of rocks are one color, and the fossils might be a different color. And sometimes different fossils within that strata of rock have different colors from themselves. So depending on what their shells are made out of or whatnot, a phosphatic shell, like some kind of a brachiopod, might have kind of a purplish or a pinkish tint. So if you see something purplish or pinkish, it's probably either that kind of brachiopod or some kind of a bone, which also is phosphatic as well. Things like that. You just kind of know what you're looking for, what's in that formation or sequence of rock that you're searching in. So you kind of know what to expect, and you're looking for the certain shapes and colors and things like that. But that's a pretty general thing, but that's about what I do, what my approach is.
Talking about the approach of paleontological researcher Kenneth Gass, our guide to the fossil record from hundreds of millions of years ago, what has been unearthed in what is now Wisconsin. What can this prehistoric history tell us today? Have you been to a fossil exhibit at a Wisconsin museum? Where was it? What was memorable? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Kenneth Gass here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the earliest evidence of life on land. Look no further than Wisconsin and Blackberry Hill fossil remains shedding light on early animal life. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you curious about major types of fossil evidence discovered in Wisconsin or a half a world away? What can Wisconsin do to better preserve the fossil record? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Kenneth Gass, honorary curator at the Milwaukee Public Museum, is with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Frank now, joining us from Spring Brook. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. See, I have, kind of a comment. Last summer, in July, I went out to Montana, North Dakota, and looked for fossils, but mainly I was going out there to visit museums, dinosaur museums. There's like every large community out there has a fairly good collection of fossils, and it's a big tourist attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, twofold question, is like, where is a good recommendation to see fossils in a museum here in Wisconsin? And two, is there a potential to build like a tourist industry around this interest? Because obviously it appealed to me. I spent a considerable amount of money going out west last summer.
Frank, thank you for those questions. Kenneth?
Well, you're in the right place because this state actually has some pretty good museums. There are a couple of museums that actually show some of the fossils that I've been talking about. The Madison Museum, the UW Natural History Museum in Madison, Wisconsin, has a very good, because the whole specialty of the museum is geology, very good section on paleontology, very extensive. including things from Wisconsin. They even have things from jellyfish and trackways from Blackberry Hill up on display. Also, several really nice fossils of, in fact, the leech that I was talking about is on display from the Waukesha biota.
Hmm.
And so there are actually quite a few nice exhibits that are at the UW Museum, as well as the Green Museum in Milwaukee has a lot of things on the Devonian, and that's at UWM. And, of course, the Milwaukee Public Museum, which is an excellent museum, a large section on fossils and dinosaurs and things like that, displays. There's a big diorama from the Silurian. That's a reef. It's a different environment from the Waukesha biota, but it's the reef that I was referring to. It's a very large exhibit. So, and then right now, actually, as we speak, there's a special exhibit on dinosaurs, on tyrannosaurs specifically, going on for the next, I think, 80 days or so for now, and which you can also check out. And there are other museums, the Wise Earth Science Museum, the Menasha. There's some nice fossils on display at the museum in Green Bay. And there are quite a few other small museums that have smaller amounts of fossils and geological material. But the Milwaukee Public Museum, the UW Geology Museum, those are the two biggest places right now.
You started with the University of Wisconsin Geology Museum, which is in Weeks Hall on the UW-Madison campus. And you mentioned there you can see the corals and the jellyfish and other sea creatures that can really give you a sense of what was happening here in Wisconsin.
Correct, yeah. Like I said, there's even a wall that has several nice large fossils from Blackberry Hill, right? Jellyfish and these things called climactic nighties, which means literally it means ladder footprints because it looks so like a ladder or motorcycle footprints, and they were made by a giant slug-like animal that was
wow
water. Didn't talk about that before. It couldn't really walk as such because for something to walk, usually has to have feet or legs. This was something that didn't have any appendages whatsoever. It was just a giant slug-like animal, up to about a yard long. And that would come up and feast on the microbial mats that were blanketing the beach. And so those are all over the place. And they've got some nice fossils of those at the UW Geology Museum.
How would it get around? Would it just kind of roll around or slither? Or how did it move?
I'll picture a garden slug. It's similar
okay
to that.
Uh-huh.
But it made a very unusual trail. But there are some snails today that make a very similar trail, which is another reason why we think that this was a relative of the mollusk, of the snail. And they would get around, and they really did because their trackways were 10 feet long, 20 feet long, longer than that if you just keep following them around. And they wound around, processing the sediment for all the organic material that was in there and eating it. And in the process, they made these really beautiful, interesting-looking trails that are we've got in the article that we talked about called Climactic Nighties. It looks more like motorcycle tracks.
Well, we've got another question coming in here, Kenneth. Artist from Richland Center called, couldn't stay. An artist is wondering about the fossils and artifacts that are found near the village of Boaz. One of the things found there, artist says, was a mastodon. Do you know anything about artifacts around that area?
I know that there are a lot of mastodon and mammoth fossils found throughout the state of Wisconsin, in fact, throughout the whole country. Of course, the glaciers were very prevalent here in Wisconsin, perhaps more than any other state, for a longer period of time, and the last glacial period was called the Wisconsin stage, and because we have such good representation of the sediment and the contained fossils within our state. So, it doesn't surprise me to find a mammoth or a mastodon pretty much anywhere in Wisconsin.
Okay. What is it like to work with a museum to open a fossil display at a museum? What are those steps and what does it take?
Well, a whole lot of planning. I'm probably not the best person. I've never really designed an exhibit, but I do know that a lot of planning goes into it. You have to have, of course, the scientific consultants who are kind of giving you the reality of it. And Sometimes they'll even provide the fossils or casts of them themselves that the artists then can use when they're designing the displays. Lots of materials go into the exhibit, materials that, you know, have to have the right aesthetics. They have to have the right the realism.
Mm-hmm.
And all the lighting goes in there. There was a nice temporary exhibit that was put on display of a big slab of fossils from Blackberry Hill. This was a couple of years ago. It was called Hidden Wisconsin, a special exhibit that MPM had. And it was like the most popular part of the exhibit was that slab of fossil footprints from these euthycarcinoids at Blackberry Hill. And what they did was, instead of just, you know, attractively laying out the slab, putting it on a big armature that they had to build for it, I guess it was a lot of money to build this armature just to prop up this 2,600-pound slab of rock, but they also had to light it properly so you could see low angle. And low angle lighting is about the only way you can really see some of these trace fossils.
They
become practically invisible with direct sunlight. So they had that to consider. The lighting was everything. And then they also had a nice exhibit that they did was they put an animation over the slab of the euthycarcinoids as though they are making these trackways.
Oh, cool.
And so there's lots of things that go into it now, a lot more than a lot of people might imagine.
Well, in our last minute together, what can be done to preserve these locations that we've been discussing this hour that have rare fossils? What do you want to see in terms of preservation?
I think to continue the hands-off policy of Estabrook Park, that is just, and it's just a general rule that you can't remove anything. I think if they cave to the few people that want to be able to collect fossils there, and in so basically destroying the small remaining last locality, if we take away those restrictions, we've lost. So if they just keep the restrictions in there and say, just the existing restrictions saying nothing should be taken. I think the other way is just keep common sense. Know that these things are rare. They're disappearing. All these sites are disappearing to development. Just if you're going to collect, make sure it's legal. You get the permission of the landowners. And if you don't, hands off, basically.
Well, Kenneth, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Kenneth Gass is an honorary curator to the Department of Geology at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We have a link to his paper. It's called Fossils of Blackberry Hill, Wisconsin, USA. It's in Geology Today. And you can find a link at WPR.org/mornings. And for disclosure, the Milwaukee Public Museum is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.